Hey guys, it's Chris. Quick note before we get into the show. Voting is now open for the Season 3 Recipe Club Awards. You have to sign up to our Discord server at majordomomedia.com, where you will be able to vote on topics like best overall recipe, best comeback, biggest robbery of the season, hint, hint, and all sorts of other fun stuff. But you can only do it if you're on our Discord, and the awards ballot is open now. So get over there before the finale at the end of November. Welcome to Recipe Club, the podcast where we debate the best way to cook the things you want to eat. My name is Chris Ying. I co-host this podcast with David Chang.
Hi.
This is the show where you, the listener, gets to submit a treasured family recipe so that three of America's most...
Eligible bachelors.
Three of America's most ineligible bachelors can screw around with it, change it according to our proprietary wheel of death. This is a little bit of a special episode. We've been doing a lot of special episodes. A lot. We've stacked up the special episodes for the end of the season, making them feel they're all still special. But today is special because we have a friend in the studio with us, a Recipe Club first timer, Malcolm Livingston II.
Yes, thank you for including the second. It's very important. It's royalty.
You know, I tried to. I had a hard time figuring out if Dave owns something, we say it's Dave's, and he does Dave apostrophe S. Chris apostrophe S. Do I put the apostrophe S on the Roman numeral 2 for you? Is that what you do?
Yes, you must include Malcolm Livingston II. You know, It just rings off a lot better than just Malcolm Livingston. It's really ownership of Malcolm Livingston II.
Malcolm is a dear friend of ours. You, the listener, if you don't know already, probably know him best as the former pastry chef at Noma, but our dude here has one of the most impressive CVs in the game.
Yeah, that's all nice, but I think what we want to talk about right now, even before Recipe Club, is... this guy went on this ridiculous, ludicrous hike.
Yes.
With Mr. Rene Redzepi, who asked me to join the hike. And I was like, Rene, I don't have 30 fucking days in the wilderness. 30 days. I was like, so what, 3 days? 30 days. I was like, yeah, man, good luck by yourself. And then I find out that this knucklehead in front of me decided to join. So I was like, ah.
So let's just dive. This is the meat of the matter. So Malcolm, very impressive CV. But I was gonna say, you're looking more thin. You're looking fit. You're looking spiritually centered since we last saw you. Because, like Dave just said, you did the Camino de Santiago,
the Vision Quest.
How many miles?
500 miles.
500 miles from where to Galicia?
Yeah, we walked from San Sebastian to Santiago de Compostela to see the amazing church in Santiago. It was 500 miles. First day of the hike, I sprained my ankle. Day 4, I went to the hospital. But by day 8, I was back at it. You know, like, honestly, it was one of the crazy experiences that I've ever done. Like, literally. I mean, I would equate it to probably, like, entering into the restaurant industry. You're fresh, and it's, like, that adrenaline, and you're just doing the same thing every day, day out, punishing yourself. And I haven't, like, really felt like that in a long time since... like, I kind of left the restaurant industry, and I felt, actually, Renee, when I was in Kyoto, I had joined Renee and the team for Noma Kyoto, and we were hiking a bit out there, and he's like, Malcolm, you need to come with me to Spain. And anybody that knows Renee, it's like, when you get summoned, it's like, oh, shit. Like,
I do need to come.
I do need to go. So, like, first thing, naturally, like, I talked to my wife, I'm like, babe, Renee asked me to go hike in Spain for a month. She's like, what? I was like, yeah, I know it's crazy, but I'm going to do it. She's like, all right, just make as much food as you can and pack the freezer as much as you can. So, like, I'm packing everything down in the freezer for her to cook, almost like if Ellie's still a baby, just to make her life easier. But, yeah, I went 27 days It was insane. Most of the hike, even though I went with Renee, I walked by myself because he's insanely fast.
But he's got short legs.
Yeah, but it's that
low center of gravity.
But he took on, so Renee, we all know, like took on this like crazy personal fitness thing a few years ago, and has just like been training Goggins super hard, and like he's taking on these like extreme hikes as
like
one
of those
things.
Because he's trying to train for American Ninja Warrior.
he wants to be Danish Ninja Warrior.
Or Macedonian.
Macedonian Ninja Warrior. Here's the thing. Oh, there's so much to unpack here. We saw you in the studio like a week or two before this, and I asked how much you've been training for this because Renee said, you need to start hiking. You need to walk 10 kilometers a day. How much training did you do? How much preparation physically before you got out there?
I actually did more food prep, like figuring out where I want to eat and like actually what kind of food can I eat on the trip to like power me through. But the actual training, I didn't walk at all. I mean, I walked on the treadmill. I did like little 2 mile hikes, nothing with a backpack. And I did some strength training. But I think that's why I sprained my ankle, because I wasn't used to the backpack. My bag was way too heavy. And then also I learned I have weak ankles. So I had some shoes.
The journey of self-discovery, man. I got weak ankles.
Shoes, low-top shoes, did not do me justice. I mean, I felt like a sack of shit. Just like, and then Renee just turns on. He's like, Chef.
You took a tumble. And he like just looked back and you were, oh, man.
I was
that's
just
rough.
Going down. And this was literally 20 minutes before the hike was over. We were coming down a cliff. Just like, well, like a hill.
Oh, no. And he's just looking back, just thinking, what have I done? Who did I invite on this thing?
He said I was the best companion for a hike. That
so,
made me feel
you,
very
you hiked
well,
a lot,
very
but, good. You know, Dave was asking as we were out there getting ready to come in here, a lot of one-on-one deep conversation time? Are you just sitting around talking about life?
Lots of one-on-ones, lots of in-depth thought leadership sort of like encouragement. You know, the way Renee, I feel like when Renee talks to you, it's like almost like if like, you know, like a wizard is like summoning you or something. He's just so like methodic on how he talks. So, yeah, I felt very good. It worked.
He does have kind of like big wizard energy.
Gandalf the gray.
Yeah.
Gandalf the brunette. What did you pack in your freezer for the family before you set out?
Lots of like sofrito, which is just, you know, obviously the base for Spanish cooking. My mom is from the Caribbean, Barbados, but she made, and we have some people in our family from Puerto Rico and Dominican, but she made a lot of that. That's like the basis for any of our sauces that we cooked in the house. Dashis, lots of dumplings. Like my daughter loves gyoza. So, you know, lots of gyozas that just, I mean, I'm a pastry chef, so the freezer is my best friend. Like, I've literally learned that from Alex Tupac. We used to kind of sandbag.
Is there any greater sandbag master?
No. Stupak is the sandbag master.
I've just marveled from a distance for years.
What, like, give us a taste of what the Stupak school of sandbagging will have you do. What does that mean
Alex
to
Tupac, somebody? The chef of Empeon and Misha, one of the great, great chefs we've ever produced, highly underrated, and quite frankly, the food media is too fucking stupid to appreciate all of his all the things he's done.
Stupocalypse.
Stupocalypse is right. Anyway,
so what is it? What does a sandbagging trick look like?
I'll just say this: hard prep, easy plate up. So what that means? That's like WD-50 staple. You know, you work at. Well, you work in the dungeon of Alex Tupac, which is downstairs in the craziest laboratory ever. But yeah, hard prep, meaning like you work like crazy on perfecting this technique. You make it beautiful and you just store it in a way that is so gratifying in boxes and boxes and boxes, well wrapped, well covered. Make sure there's no air into it. But it's just like you stock up that freezer, whether it's ice cream bases, sauces, whatever, cryovac, and literally, when you have 150 cover service and you're just slinging desserts, you're like, oh my God, we only got like 10 left. No, we don't. We got like 150 in the freezer. What are you talking about? Like, we're just ready for war. So that was the methodology of sandbagging.
My favorite Stupak moment is, I can't remember what it was, but Wiley, when WD-50 was open, was like, he had me walk into the, go in the walk-in for something, right? And I walked in because I'd eat there a lot as like a diner. And I was like in the walk-in. For whatever reason, I looked to my right and I was like, that tire fucking metro shelving is full of plates. And I was like, that's so weird. It's just like 11:30. It's like late, like at night. No more covers. And I'm like, the fuck? I was like, what the fuck? And there's like, I don't know, there's like 60 fucking plates, maybe more. Maybe there's another fucking walk-in of plates too. I don't even know. And I go back and I talk to Stu back later. I'm like, yo, did you just fucking invent a way of sandbagging? It was a fucking foam. It was a foam thing. All that was missing was the central component, which I don't remember. I'm like, are you sandbagging foam? Like, literally, did you invent a way to fucking make foam so stable?
And just sit there.
And just sit there overnight till the next day. And he's like, yeah. And he walked away.
Yeah, I vaguely remember this story because there was a time he was doing that. But also, I remember the foam thing because at that time, we had like a bunch of just like crazy food scientists coming in because like Wiley was always making stuff. And I remember this one incident, we had this foam, this like ingredient called Mivatex, I think it was called. Hmm. So it was like a heat stable foam. And we were making like argan oil, olive oil foams that could sit on hot plates for literally like 30 minutes and they would not slack out. And it tasted like a marshmallow. It was just crazy. I kind of vaguely remember that situation.
He played it 24 hours in advance.
Oh my God.
And I was like, you are the darkest art master of this shit. The
world's still ever fresh. Seen. Yeah. Still tastes good.
Still delicious. Yeah. But no one ever even comes close.
Does that make service actually pretty? I mean, you said work, prep hard, easy service. Like pickup is pretty easy then.
Yes, because I think that methodology works well, especially in New York City, but any restaurant, like, you make something that looks like it took forever, which it did, but then the plate up is super easy because I think at that time period, like, everyone was doing gels or dots, whatever, just trying to make the plate look so crazy. But Alex was just like, we got to do more with less and let's make the service better, because we had also 3-course, 5-course dessert tasting a la carte before we actually went to the all tasting menu only restaurant. So that was a lot.
The other thing that you are becoming extremely well known for in our office, maybe not yet with the broader public yet.
This is a Dave Stradamus. This is a taken from the DC show. Oh. This is my prediction. This thing that Chris Yang is about to talk about how should I give it a comp? It's going to change your dessert game, and you're going to read about it. You're going to read about it because there'll probably be poor imitators of it. Mm-hmm. And then like places like Goop and all these other fucking influencers are going to start writing about it and how fucking sick it is. And you're going to hear it first. This is the day that you heard what Chris is about to say about what Malcolm's working on. This is the day that we let it be known to you that you can go back in time to this fucking podcast that we told you fucking so.
It'll be a trend piece in a year from now, mark our words. August novelties.
Yeah.
Our freezer is stocked with, you brought them in for some events just for us to taste. Ice cream bars. Let me paint a picture. Dave and I are standing around the kitchen counter one day after shooting or recording or working. And, you know, it's treat time. It's time to have a little treat. Dave is unwrapping the cookies and cream ice cream bar and losing his goddamn mind because of the low calorie count with this thing.
Yes.
He's like, there's nobody watching. It's just him and me. And he's just being like, how many calories is this thing? Like 180 calories? Something like
that? The cookies and cream is 180.
Yep. 180 calories. And he's like, a Duff bar is 900 calories. And he goes, I need two of these right now, and I won't feel bad about it. So he unwraps another one. They are vegan, gluten-free, nut-free ice cream bars. They're extraordinarily delicious and kind of ridiculously light in that way. The strawberry one is even less. The strawberries and cream is...
Yeah, strawberry is 130. It's like a juice.
All right. So... why and how?
So the why I decided to start August Novelties is I mean, like, for the longest time, I've always wanted to do ice cream, whether it was working in restaurants or even after restaurants. And I felt like that was, like, my strongest Achilles heel to, like, my kind of way I cook. I felt like I make an amazing ice cream. And, you know, after looking through, you know, what everyone was doing, you know, because I felt like I was doing something interesting, but I never had a shop. You know, I never had a product in the market, so I was just doing stuff on social. But then I started seeing other brands, like, kind of doing something. I'm like, man, are they, like, watching? And I was like, fuck, man, I got to get this thing out. And then last year, I just said, F it. I'm going to just do it. So I just put it out there. And the reason for doing a non-dairy, non-gluten, and non-nut ice cream was because, again, like, kind of thinking back to that methodology of doing more with less, I wanted to see if it was possible. Like, I really wanted to put myself in a box and see, like, yo, can I do this? And I stumbled upon an ingredient called tiger nut, and I was blown away by it. No one was really using it. It wasn't, like, tasted like coconut, which is usually you kind of hear, like, oh, this ice cream's great, but it tastes like coconut. I don't like coconut. Then it was, like, my daughter, like, she's another person. She doesn't really like coconut. So I was like, oh, fuck. So then the whole thing with the nut allergy. I remember I was serving an ice cream and I had nuts in it. And this kid, like, was like, oh, I'm allergic to nuts. And I was like, man, we got to do something different. Like, I want to just, like, take everything across the board. So just went hard, like, every day working on this base. And I found something that I really liked. And I just went super nostalgic. Like, if you look at, you know, a Neapolitan style ice cream, strawberry, chocolate, and vanilla. So that was kind of our three flavors to start with. Strawberry vanilla using Harry's Berries. That's like the designer berry of California, if you don't know about it. And I don't know how they've been around for years, but they're just like, it's going crazy. And then you got cookies and cream, which it's almost like it's a textural issue. It's kind of like if you had an Oreo dipped inside of milk and it's like chewy and chocolatey. And then the inside is like the fluff. And then the last one is tortilla chocolate, which is my favorite. It's kind of my homage to like the Haagen-Dazs crispy almond bar, but it's tortillas and it's no nuts and it's gluten-free. And that kind of inception came from a trip to Yucatan with Renee. We were staying in Hacienda. We went to Mexico City and had this amazing chocolate. And I was just like, wow, why isn't nobody dipping tortillas in chocolate? It is mind-blowing. So I brought that back, and there you have it. That's the fleet to start with.
It's delicious. And it's low-cal enough where this is the highest compliment I can give to, like, one, like, say, chocolate Dove bar that's probably 800 calories. You may actually think about eating seven August bars to one Dove bar, right? Like, that's how good they are.
Damn.
Yeah, I would choose it over the Dove bar, even calorie count notwithstanding.
It's legit good.
Can I just say that? I actually making this, I didn't even have calories in mind. I literally was like, I want to make something delicious and craveable, and I just so happened to land on that, and I was like, oh, wow, by the way, we did that too.
And for a kid that has a bunch of dietary restrictions, it's a game changer. And that's the thing is, like, it's the same thing when developing a menu. If something happens to be vegan, I'm not making it because it's vegan. It's just...
Your first priority is deliciousness.
It just is. That's the way it is because that's all that matters.
It just is, yeah.
It just so happens. We're not highlighting it as such.
Yeah.
And it's a fucking delicious product, and that's all that matters, so...
Can we do a really last thing on this on the ice cream bars? And you know, pertinent to Recipe Club and food discussion and everything here. You guys, I heard you guys talking a little bit out in the lobby about... how they're not that sweet, but something like you make up for it in a way with the texture. What do you sort of mean by that when you're thinking about a dessert that's like, we complain all the time, actually, Dave and I, about like the Asian mantra of it's not too sweet has to be the first thing you say about a dessert. But you were saying something interesting about like how the texture almost like compensates, or it's like it's a textural thing more than it's about being sweet.
Yeah. I mean, not to give away too much technique, I don't want to gatekeep either, but like, you know, I think, like, sugar is an interesting product because, you know, there's obviously different forms of sucrose and different forms of sugar. But what I like to do is almost use cane sugar as a seasoning, like salt. Like, you don't necessarily need to inhibit crystallization using cane sugar. You can use liquid or you can use syrup-based sweeteners such as, you know, glucose, tapioca, brown syrup. But all of those sweeteners have different tastes. So as long as you're reading your bricks properly, you can kind of manipulate how sweet something is by playing with the sucrose and also the fat in the ice cream. And technically, because mine is a non-dairy product, I can't necessarily call it ice cream. So my fat percentage doesn't need to be, you know, over 18% to call it ice. It could be whatever I want it to be. I could basically do what I want and people will treat this like this is ice cream, even though my formulations are a lot different than the average commercialized ice cream.
So I think we've properly established Malcolm's pastry and cooking chops here. We brought Malcolm in here for, this is a holiday episode. This is going to air just before we get into Thanksgiving. And we asked Malcolm to give us a holiday themed recipe. This is not an audience sourced recipe. This is a Malcolm sourced recipe. And you came back with your version of sweet potato pie.
Absolutely. Sweet potato pie, dear to the heart. I mean, both sides of my family, my aunt Monique on my mom's side. And of course, like, if you've done your research about me or read any story, I've always bigged up my paternal aunt, Aunt Alice. She's my first memory of a dessert. And honestly, she's just top notch killer with the sweet potato pie. And I can't think of any other holiday without having it. So I literally didn't know their recipes. So, and I was like, you know what? I feel like I can make a version that is just like crazy, but then also honor them in a certain way.
Ain't no way your grandma was using 1.5 grams of agar. No way.
Definitely not.
If she was, she came from the future.
She's a time traveler, man. That's why you admire her so much. You get 187 million results if you Google sweet potato pie recipe. I'm going to say this about myself. I won't speak for Dave here. I'm not an expert on sweet potato pie or its northern cousin, the pumpkin pie. It's not a personal favorite. I think we know where Dave stands on the pumpkin. So I'm going to ask you, what makes a good sweet potato pie? Out of those 187 million results, what are you actually looking for, you, Malcolm?
Yeah, subjective. You know, for me, I think what makes a delicious sweet potato pie is like definitely tasting spices, good roast on the sweet potato, texture. I hate a lot of sweet potatoes because texturally I think they suck. Like either it's mealy, they have strings in them, or it's like, what? Why did you make it so sweet? Why'd you put marshmallow on it? Like, just weird stuff. And I think, like, the crust is, like, really important. So, like, this recipe actually uses a ready-made crust. And the reason why I did that, some people be like, what? You didn't make your own graham cracker crust? No, I didn't, actually. I decided to revolutionize the sweet potato filling, focus on that, so you go crazy, and then you're like, I can do this, too. Yes, that's what I want.
Something, we'll get to this later, but, like, something cool happens when you bake that ready-made crust, though, too. It becomes way better than just when you just throw some ice cream in there or whatever. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to that. I will say this. Like I said, I'm not generally a fan of sweet potato pie, but it's actually a dish that makes sense to me as to why they serve it at Thanksgiving. Like, Dave and I complain all the time about why you eat, what do we complain about? Easter makes no sense. Why do you eat ham on Easter? Why do you eat certain foods on these holidays? But sweet potatoes in America make sense, right? You have George Washington Carver, one of the most important agricultural scientists in history, was trying to help the poor farmer by diversifying the crops they grew. Sweet potatoes, peanuts, these were the focus of his efforts. He popularized sweet potato and peanut and the various uses of them. Obviously, it goes back to our history of slavery and the tastes of the big house wanting the slaves to make sweet potato. Mm-hmm. Sweet potato pie became a staple in African-American communities because originally they were forced to make it for the white slaveholders, right? And now it has been sort of taken root as its own thing, right? So, man, regardless of how I feel about it generally, and I did like this sweet potato pie, like, at least it's a dessert that makes sense on the table. Mm. It's like part of our history, right?
Yes.
So that, I will give it that. Say a piece, Say, give me the Dave
never
Chen.
Had, I'll tell you the truth. I never had sweet potato pie in my life.
Interesting.
And I think mainly, and I talk about it when I was making the recipe, I don't have an affinity for sweet potato, mainly because it's something that my grandparents, particularly my mom's mom, would eat all the time. Potatoes were life, particularly in Korea. And in Korean, in Asian culture, particularly in Korean culture, kogoma is the name. Like, sweet potato is like, they roast it by the fire, and you're just eating it like it's candy. That's like dessert. It's everywhere. It's almost omnipresent. And I just never wanted that. I wanted real candy growing up. So, like, even if my parents served the sweet potato pie, I would have probably avoided it.
It's interesting you say that, because as I was reading about this a little bit, that was like just the roasted sweet potato in the embers of a fire was like the first sweet potato dessert, you know, in like the plantations and everything too. It's like that's the sweet potato, I think, takes off because it's dessert if you just roast it.
Absolutely.
Right? Like a good sweet potato.
Yes.
So usually this is the point where I describe the recipe, but being as I don't know what I'm talking about and this is your recipe, why don't you run us through your development process for this, how you make this sweet potato pie, all the details of your version of it.
Thanks, Chris.
Welcome to the delicious dish.
So you start off by getting a very large sweet potato. You want, I have to emphasize that you want a fatty. You want like a nice plump sweet potato. You don't want like...
It's my nickname.
This just is like sounding crazy. But yeah, like you don't want like a slender one because ironically, I've come to find out that the thinner sweet potatoes actually are sweeter. The larger ones have more starch in them. So for this particular recipe, you want the larger ones because you want the pie to set properly.
So even the same weight. You still want like a big, fat, bulbous one more than you want a long, tubular one.
I don't know. It's really weird. I don't know the scientific composition of this, but this is just by trial and error that,
that is science,
a lot of the larger sweet potatoes generally have a little bit more starch in them. And when I've used like the thinner ones, the pie has always been overly sweet. It's like always like a little bit off.
So get a fatty.
Get a fatty, right? Roast it off. Once it's roasted, I roast them at a high temperature, 450 degrees for about an hour. You'll start to see, you know, the skin pull back. You'll even see some of the juices from the sweet potato start to caramelize and leach out. Pull out of the oven, let it rest till it's like a temperature that you can handle, peel off the skin, and you're going to put that inside of a food processor, and you blend that to like a smooth puree. And then I have some other ingredients. I have like some oat milk, or you can use whatever milk of your choice. I like oat. Again, starch. Starch is key here. So you want that. I use agar, telephone brand agar, and I pour that into some milk, cold oat milk, and bring that up to a boil to hydrate the agar. And agar, just a little brief on agar. I mean, obviously people know how to use it, but I feel like some people use
it. They don't. That's not
I feel
true.
Like a lot of people use it the wrong way. Uh-huh. And I'll tell you why, because like maybe some people have heard, oh, you should boil a liquid and then you dump in your agar and you whisk vigorously until, you know, it comes up to a boil. No, that's kind of wrong, because agar actually sets around like in the high 90s, like 96. But it also hydrates at boiling temperature. So what happens is you get this like particulate of agar that's like not properly dispersed in your liquid. And it almost looks like pimples or like freckles. Like if you were to like take an agar gel and smear it on a table, you'd see these little dots. And that's, even though your gel set, it's like your agar wasn't properly dispersed. And those are one of the things that like I really learned at WD-50. Like Wiley was just such a magician and such a obsessed freak with gums, and he made that a point to teach everyone about that. And you really learn how to properly use these things, like use these hydrocolloids or these emulsifiers and things like that, because you want to lock up water. But anyway, that's how you properly hydrate agar. You want to put it into a liquid that's cold, such as water or another liquid, depending on the viscosity. Whisk it, bring it up to a boil, let it boil, boil it again. So it's properly hydrated. So once that happens, we pour that inside of a food processor and we blend it with some cane sugar, some cornstarch, and also spices. The spices that I use for the recipe are cinnamon, ginger, and nutmeg. And they're all kind of just like little tinks here and there. Like, I don't want like a pumpkin spice sweet potato pie. Like, I want to taste sweet potato, but then also have some accents of these, you know, warming spices. And then we finish with some cubes of non-dairy butter. There's some vanilla extract and salt in there. And then you pour this into a pre-made crust, like a ready-baked crust that you can buy at any grocery store. And the reason, like I said before, the reason why I did that is because I think I've done something really unique with the filling. And yeah, you could take the extra mile to make a graham cracker crust, whatever crust you want. But I think you're spending a lot of time on this recipe. Like, it's like two and a half hours to like make it. It's like, save yourself the trouble and just look like a star at your party. Like, oh my God, did you make this? Like, no one's going to say the crust is so amazing. It's like, they're going to focus on the sweet potato. And they're going to think like, man, the crust is a great vessel for this. Like, I don't, pies are interesting to me because they're always like, you put this wet ass filling in this dry dough and then it gets soggy. Like, once in a while, you might hit a pie that's like changes your life, that's super flaky, but it's rare. It's super rare. And the graham cracker crust for me, like, it's just a vessel. Like, it just tastes good. It's I think it works good. Like, but I'm never like, maybe I just haven't had a crazy pie yet that like blew my mind. Cause the top is like, sometimes whether it's like a Dutch pie or like a nice pie crust, like the top will be nice, but then the bottom is like
soggy bottom.
It's a weird thing. It's like, why, you know, like, we go hard on these pies. Like, oh my God, I have the best pie recipe. Like, it uses tequila and, you know, 2/3 of baking soda and alcohol and that. And then it's like, yo, that shit is not flaky. Like, so.
Right. I don't know. And so just to put a point on the agar thing. So agar is this kind of like jelly that you get from seaweeds.
Thermo irreversible gel.
I know that agar is definitely one. Creating those super sharp, exquisite cuts. That's one thing I hate about pies. You make a nice pie and you cut it and it looks like a kid cut it. It's like, you know, like that tip is just like kind of turned left or right. It's not sharp, you know? So that the agar definitely helps with that. But also, yeah, it creates this unique texture, almost like fudge kind of. Best way to describe it is like you sink your teeth into a caramel and you get those teeth marks. It's like it's a cross between like set but not set, and it's just enough to like counterbalance with the starch and the sweet potato that you're like, yo, this is different. This is definitely different. I've never had a sweet potato pie like this. Usually it's a lot different than this, you know? Some people might even mistake it for a pumpkin pie because it's very custardy, like, but there's no eggs in it. There's no custard, so... The agar is definitely helping locking up that water and bringing it all together. Emulsification, folks.
But it's also, you know, really accentuating all the starch that's in it, right?
Yeah.
It's a starchy, you know, he's just activating or really highlighting all the natural starch in the in the farce, right? So it was, once I tasted it, I was like, damn, that's good. And you won't be happy with how I got to that point to taste it, but...
let's get to that.
I think people may not realize they eat agar quite a bit in Asia, in Asian cuisine.
Yep.
A lot of jellies are there, and agar is important in that area of the world because it's hot as fuck, right? And thermo irreversible is like it doesn't melt, right? It won't. In fact, that's why most agar applications is too much. It's almost brittle. It tastes like crap. I would say almost every application I've ever had is actually bad. It was only until like tasting some of the stuff that was invented or really popularized by the great chefs at the time, including Wiley, that I was like, oh, you know, it's a fluid gel. If you add it for here, it's much more of a textural thing. You're not highlighting it just for agar because they'll just make jello basically out of something. And then it's like, you eat it and you're like, that's not nice. that doesn't, it's brittle. It doesn't have, it looks like Jell-O, but it's not Jell-O.
But it goes a little bit to your, the sandbagging point you were talking about earlier, that what you just said about like dessert set with agar, a thermo irreversible gel
it
in
won't
a
melt.
Hot place.
It won't melt.
When you go to, yeah, the dessert stand in Asia and you have all these jellies, doesn't matter how hot it is, they're not going to collapse into nothingness.
Yeah, I'll say it. Probably you eat it and you're like, oh, that's not good. Because guess what? We don't make good desserts in Asia. Did I just say that out loud again?
Oh my God!
Well, my I guess I can do my.
We make good Western versions of desserts.
That's true. We do. The Japanese do make a good ass French pastry. But all right, so let me do mine really briefly. Then we'll get to Dave's because Dave, we usually start with the closer variation and then go further afield.
Yeah.
Dave's went further afield. My assignment for this, for doing your sweet potato pie, one of these restrictions is handmade. And so rather than buying some pre-made agar, I decided to harvest my own form of agar.
Oh my God.
So I happen to have our old friend, Dr. Ariel Johnson was in the studio with us last week. And I was like, dude, Dr. J, I don't know. I'm supposed to make Malcolm's sweet potato pie with agar. What the hell should I do? And she was like, I don't think you should try to harvest agar specifically, but you can get carrageenan from sea moss or Irish sea moss.
Yep.
And she was like,
well, that's where it comes from.
Yes. So I guess like it's a different species of seaweed gives agar, and then specifically carrageenan comes from Irish sea moss and sea moss. So
how many types of carrageenan are there, Christian?
I believe there are three.
Yes, you are correct.
Oh my God! Seriously, guys,
lambda,
there were
kappa,
infinite numbers. Like could have said,
pretty widely used.
And I said three. She was like, find some sea moss.
How do you spell carrageenan?
CARRAGEENAN.
Wednesday.
That I can do. Everything else I cannot, as you will soon hear. So, you know, in brief, she was like, just find some sea moss and just steep it in your liquid and get your harvest your carrageenan that way, and that'll be your thing.
Where'd you find sea moss? Did you get some
Air One?
Did you get some sea buckthorn?
Air One's got everything.
So
now,
here's the thing:
literally.
Sea moss is sort of in vogue right now, and Noelle in our office is the one who apprised me to this. I was like, why can I get sea moss at Air One? She was like, oh, well, it's being currently marketed for various purposes, including anti-inflammatory benefits, lustrousness of hair, and how should I say, erectile strength. And I was like, okay, well, I guess that's why I can find sea moss everywhere. So Air One had it. This bag of
not pangolin brand,
not pangolin brand.
It was rebranded.
It was rebranded.
Air One harvested.
Yeah, exactly.
Hailey Bieber.
Exactly.
Approved.
Just taken out of one bag and put into a paper bag. Found a bag of very, you know, aromatic sea moss, unprocessed, like sort of. I mean, not dried, but it was kind of like the dried in the sense it's like the texture of dried squid or something. I have no idea what I am doing. And so listening to you guys talking about how, you know, agar are your sets and you know, locks up water and what Dave was saying about accentuating starches, I was just like, well, somebody smart said throw some of this into a pot with some milk and the oat milk and it'll do its thing. So I did this late at night and I was just like, you know, the recipe calls for 150 grams of oat milk. And so I was like, well, I should probably put a little more than that because it's going to, you know, get sopped up by the sea moss. I just took a big fat pawful, threw it in there.
You literally did the opposite of like.
As he was describing what is the wrong thing to do, I was like, oh.
The worst thing to do, and he's going to attest to this. And if you want to get W. Wiley Dufresne fucking like beet red upset, like, and any of the alumni, because Christina tells you the same way. And especially now you see it on Yahoo, like everybody like, oh, this is how you use this hydrochloride. This is how you use anthro. You can buy it at your health store.
Just throw some in there.
You just throw it in there. You just throw shit in there, and then you're like, a little bit.
I had no idea.
A bump.
That's exactly. Yeah. It was not a bump, man. It was like a Scarface-sized
Wiley,
fistful.
Christian hates you.
I had no idea. And I, listen,
she's supposed to measure shit out.
The difference between me and those TikTokers is like, there's no world in which I was being like, this is how you do this.
Can I tell you, of all the years doing Recipe Club, this is the only time I've ever measured anything. Because I know.
So
you better make it accurate.
So I didn't microscale.
I didn't know what the conversion would be from like a clump of seaweed to like 1.5 grams of agar-agar. So I threw it in like the, I was the first Neanderthal on the beaches of whatever, just throwing some seaweed into a pot of milk. And suffice to say, I turned my back. And the time it took me to like turn my back and turn back around, it had just like
bloomed
into just like a, it looked like it was going to climb out of the pot and kill me. It was just like a blob of gelatinous seaweed that just like, there was no liquid whatsoever. It was just like, whoop, it was like coming for me. I was like, oh God, I done? So I did it again. I abandoned that. I roasted this, everything else I did, you know, according to directions. I roasted the sweet potatoes. I loved your description just of sort of the sugar start to like kind of like pop out of whatever orifice is then caramelized and blackened on the outside. And I think that was actually the origin of candied yams, as they start to look like candy when the sheen comes on the outside. Anyway, long story. I did it again. I put a much smaller amount of this in there and sort of just like brought it up from cold and was just sort of like pressing against the sides as it. Oh, first I actually soaked it and rinsed it a whole bunch. And then I put it in there and was pressing against to like try to just harvest as much of this as I could. It was starting to kind of dissolve into the liquid as well. But you could like clearly see like this jelly fluid was coming out and like becoming a part of the oat milk. At which point, once I had like dissolved much of this, I strained the little bits left, measured out my 150 grams, added my vanilla, made the pie as directed, and just prayed to God something was going to happen. I will say this. It definitely set. I don't think I had like the teeth mark amount. I think like I probably should have used a little more of a pawful of the seaweed. But I was happy. I was annoyed with myself. I had like truly no idea what I was doing, but it felt good to like do this thing where there's no world in which I would have ever chosen to just try this. And this ingredient, to Dave's point, is like in vogue and people are like doing these dumb things. I'm never going to instruct you to say like, you should do it my way. But it was cool to see, oh, this works. Like
it's
this works
a,
on some
really
level.
It's really sort of a loose fluid gel.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the filling is like a really light. Mm. Really light fluid gel.
Super silky. Like, and then like the other thing
I'm
is
I'm sure listeners are like, what the fuck? But that's what it is.
Yeah. You got the trendy one though. You got the Irish moss sweet potato. That's
the
like
Irish, the fancy,
people might go crazy for that. You pull up with we got the Irish moss sweet potato pot.
You
what?
Just you're able to now charge it 40% more.
All right, forget it. Maybe I will go on TikTok and be like, hey, I got the new hot shit Irish moss sweet potato pie.
Did you put some on your face? Did you cover your face in it?
You're supposed to. Just like it's like skin, whatever. The last thing I'll say about this, 100% with you on the pre-made graham cracker crust. And I'm used to just like I usually don't bake them, right? Like usually just like fill them with something that's gonna set in the fridge or whatever. Baking them, because you're a low temp bake on this too, like 325. Like it improves that crust so much because it just like slowly browns and it's like just on the cusp.
Yep.
It's dark brown. It's not black. It's like perfectly, it's perfectly delicious. So that was my experiment. It was a late night experiment after trick-or-treating with the kids. And
you made it last night.
I made it last night. /5 o'clock this morning.
Man.
So that was, I appreciate it, man. The texture is cool.
Your skin looks really good.
You got a glow.
And not only that, not that I want to see it, but I bet your erection is fucking fuerte, man.
It's very powerful right now. I don't even know what to do with it right now.
17-year-old erection, Chris here.
I'm here to promote CMOS boner pills. So that was my version.
Did it last for 4 hours?
We're still in the 4-hour window. I got to call the doctor in another 15 minutes.
The yam glow, young and magnificent.
I got that yam glow and I got that CMOS erection. Dave. We give you a variety of restrictions, as always.
Well, first of all, apologies for what I did.
What'd you do?
I was given 15 minutes You can't make this in under 15 minutes. It's just like not possible. So then they also like you do in the microwave. Well, you can't because of the pie crust. Theoretically, I guess you could if I didn't bake the pie crust.
Did I stump y'all on this one?
No.
Oh, word.
You didn't stump. They stumped. I was given the stump because of the wheel of death.
We tried to stump him.
And then
Dave corrected me immediately. He's like, no, you did not.
You did not stump me. I cannot be stumped.
So I don't know. So midway through the fail, right? So I can say, I thought, I could put it in the microwave, but I was like, I could imagine the criticism be like, oh, he's cooking everything in the microwave. So I was like, all right. So the difference is I peeled the potatoes and chopped it up. But what I did was I added added sugar, brown sugar to the potatoes because I was trying to recreate that. I do think that getting that sugar in that potato to that almost bruleed state is important, right? It has that bitterness that balances out the extreme sweetness in something, right? Mm. Especially in sweet potatoes. And that's just something where I see, you know, that's when it's done, is when you see the sugar oozing out. And it's not like normal sugar. It's like burnt sugar almost, right? That's the sign. So I was like, oh, man, I'm gonna have to recreate that flavor. And if I can't do it in an oven, so I brought it to that temperature and texture of where it started to get like almost caramel. I almost turned it to a caramel. And that's the only thing that was like correct about anything else that I've done. So along the way, I don't know what came over me because I was like, oh, I can make the pie. I've already lost a 15-minute mark, right? Already lost a 15 minutes. There's not going to happen. So I was like, all right. Whatever, I'll now make it as such. I'll do as the recipe intends because now I have the farce ready to go. By the way, it was delicious. I was like, wow, that is shockingly good. And you could almost eat it like a pudding. Yeah. That's what it was. It's almost like it tasted like a Christmas pudding. And I don't think that if you told anybody like what it was, they would have no idea that it was sweet potato. That's what I felt, right? When it was all blitzed, should have just stopped there. Something came over me. I was possessed by Satan because I took the perfectly fine pie crust and then I added it to a bowl with flour.
You crumbled up the pre-made pie crust into a bowl
to make it
flour.
Into another crust.
This is just like.
Why? I don't know. And because I wanted to do everything live, right? Like what you see on film is what you get. Like there's no bullshit editing. I really thought maybe I should edit this out. I knew we had it back. I was like, nah, fuck, I'm pot committed now. It's like, there's no way. And then I'm looking at it, I was like, what am I going to do with this? Like, again, there's not enough time to do something like that. I'm like, fuck. Well, I don't even know what I was thinking to put.
You had a perfectly suitable pie crust.
But I did. I added flour to it without knowing what I was going to do. I just did that. You understand? Like, I take the pie crust out, put it in the bowl, and then I added some fucking, like, a 50-50 mix of AP and bread flour. And once I did that, I realized, like, it's like I had murdered somebody, and I just come to a realization, what did I just
There's
do?
There's no taking that
There's
back.
There's no taking that back. And I have the really nice feeling. I'm like, fuck, what do I do? I didn't know what I was going to do. So what I did was, considering the time constraints, I tried to turn it into like a strudel.
Whoa. The strudel is the strudel is the quick pie.
Like a strudel. But like, because I thought like maybe the color and the flavor made it seem like, oh, I could turn this into like a cinnamon bun with the graham cracker crust in it. But I didn't have time to add any fucking leavening agents. I guess I could have added baking powder.
Now,
in retrospect,
now that I think about it, there's many
many other ways than yeast. I was like, what the fuck I'm thinking. That just shows you how little I was thinking about it.
I should have used yeast.
I should have leavened it to some degree. But instead, I made a horrible dough with just water and put it together.
Water, flour, bread,
and graham cracker crumbs.
Interesting.
Graham cracker dumpling.
Yeah. It was. Let me advise you. There's a reason why this has never been done because the graham crackers don't really marry well with the wheat flour.
You literally made a graham cracker dumpling dough.
Yeah. I made a rock. It was almost like a rock. right? like a Play-Doh, but like a grainy Play-Doh. That's what it was like. I was like, that's the only, and I was like, oh, fuck. And you couldn't really, I couldn't work it enough either because the graham cracker made it really difficult to like develop any gluten in it as well. So it's like, so this is basically garbage. I just turned it into fucking garbage. There's nothing I can do with this now.
It's like you took the statue of David and just broke it into pieces so you could create some new thing.
You know? Yeah. So like, what I mean, like, there's no way I could develop this into anything at this point. So I, again, when I decided I was going to make strudel, I didn't even know at the time I was like, I was going to make a strudel. I was just trying to figure out what can I do with this now.
Since I
realized that there's now nothing I can do with this dough, except like maybe like try to sheet it out as thin as possible and then... like, what could I make? Then I was like, oh, I guess I'm going to have to make some kind of strudel, some kind of bun. So, you know, it was like I was like, you know, speaking with my aunt. It just was like.
It's coming.
In tongues, I just like made this thing without knowing what anything else could do. I smashed that shit out, and it looked terrible. It didn't really spread out at all. I just like plotched it together like wet sand. You know,
okay.
Over the cutting board, and I smeared the fucking the filling into it.
Oh, you just smeared,
and then I used a bench scraper to like lift it up over, and I could, and then it looked pretty good. It looked pretty good because by the end, it had enough sort of like dented it that it would like pick itself off. So this part riddled with holes looked terrible. Looked like Freddy Krueger, right? The end part. That finally lifted itself over. It's like it actually looked like a cinnamon bun.
It looked like you meant what you were doing.
I knew what I was doing, and I was like, now moment of, oh, I'm good. I think I can rescue this. I think I can land the fucking plane. This is gonna be pretty sick. So I reached into the trash and I took the pie tray out.
Oh no! You put it back in.
Put it back. So then I sliced it. But you can't really slice this because it's like cutting wet sand, right? So and then I put it into the pie tray, and I baked it off
like cinnamon roll style. Little cross sections.
So now I'm making cinnamon rolls.
Okay.
In your graham cracker crust tin.
Yeah, my graham cracker crust tin. Uh-huh. And then it dawned on me. I was like, you know what? I should just make a frosting, cover this shit up, and it's gonna look good. I'll make a fucking frosting.
There it is.
And it'll look fucking good. It'll look like. And then I realized like. Well, I've been videotaping this, and I'm just saying we can't edit this. And this is what, again, most people would do if they were fucking making some bullshit film on social. They would edit it all out like they intended to do. So I was like, well, I can't, like, how am I, you know?
I got
to
see this.
There's no way I can fucking do this now as a lie. I just have to just say, like, all right, I can't cover this shit up. This is what it is. So I baked it, took it out, and it looked terrible. It looked really bad. Like incredibly bad, and then I took one out and I tasted it. And I'm like, it's not awesome. Wasn't the worst thing I've ever made in terms of taste. Visually, one of the worst things I've ever made. Top 10 worst things I've ever made visually.
Right.
But I sort of landed the plane, you know.
I'll tell you my experience of it.
Couple passengers got concussions, broken arms and legs, but I landed the fucking plane.
No deaths. I was downstairs in our studio when Dave went into the kitchen to go start working on his sweet potato pie. And I was like, okay, cool. Like Dave's gonna do his 15-minute sweet potato pie, and I went upstairs to go do some work. Ships in the night. Dave finishes his thing, leaves. I'm coming downstairs for a meeting. The last thing I remember was Dave is making a pie downstairs, and now I'm downstairs for this meeting. And Noelle is serving the people we're meeting with some kind of cinnamon roll or something. Like, I was like, wait, what is that? And she was like, it's Dave's thing. And I was like, Dave was making a pie. Now it's a cinnamon roll. And they're like,
a cinnamon roll?
They were like,
it was like a,
it looked
it
like
a sweet potato
cinnamon roll was the closest visual analog. But I will say one thing against it and one thing in its favor. The thing against it was they were like, Chris, try some. And my first reaction was, did they already chew that? Am I supposed to eat something they already chewed? It looks insane looking. And then I was like, okay, I'll eat it. Here's the thing I'll say in its favor. I took one sort of cautious bite. And then over the course of this meeting, I ate the whole goddamn thing. I ate all of it because I was like, you know what? I don't know what's going on here. And it's interesting that you bring up that you wanted that almost bitterness of, like, you know, sugar that's been caramelized or whatever. Because I was like, it had a really nice kind of like bitter balance to it. Like that was the thing about that pie that was, or not pie. What do you want to call it?
I don't know. It's going like morning glories.
Morning glory about Chang's morning glory that really stood out. So
he was unlocking umami.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he was unlocking umami in your sweet potato pie.
So I made her something. I made a recipe that nobody should ever make.
Well, I think if we combine the thought process, we have something very marketable. We have a burnt sugar or burnt caramel sweet potato pie with Irish moss.
Mm. We'd sell the hell out of that.
We'd sell that. I'm throwing it out there.
And gives you long-lasting erections.
Yeah. Very fertile. Very fertile, virile people.
It literally sounds amazing. That might be a smoothie, actually. Yeah.
So that's
a smoothie's going to go strong like bone.
Morning glory. All right, so that's three variations on a theme. I think big takeaway here is I think your OG version of this pie everybody should make for their holiday tables or whenever. You know, we've also got a viral sensation on our hands here that we've come up with. Mm-hmm. Do you want to do scores? There's no scoring this. This makes no sense.
We should still do score.
All right, fine.
We'll score.
Someone's got to win. Someone's got to lose, Malcolm. Oh. Today in the booth, we have Gabby and Victoria, who are going to put their heads together and think about which of these three versions deserves to win. Seems pretty clear to me. Which is second place and which is third place. While they're doing that, I'm just going to briefly say there's one more regular episode of the season before we get to the finale. That's going to be with Priya and John DeBerry. I don't know if you know this, Dave. The entire season comes down to this head-to-head face-off between JDB and Priya.
Wow.
And if I take second, I will ruin one of their chances. So a lot at stake for the maple syrup episode, which is going to come up soon. We will have a finale where we're going to give out the season awards. You can vote right now on Discord. All of the awards ballot is going to be up there. So you're going to vote on a number of categories, and we're going to have some surprises and trophies and all that stuff, all that good stuff for the finale. And then, Malcolm, you know, I think season four will be right around the corner after that, in which
Quattro,
where we, I think Dave and I, unbeknownst to you, have some real designs on dragging your ass into much more of season four.
Yo, I'm just going to say, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm with it. Season Quattro, M Living 2 in the building.
Oh my God. He's a natural. All right, Gabby.
I think it's pretty easy to guess how this is going to play out. Malcolm, you get first place. It seems like you made a really great recipe. I'm going to give second place to Chris's special pie.
Well, you never tasted it.
I plan on eating some when we get back to the studio. But
you tasted my filling. Was not filling not amazing?
I did. I will admit that we did crush a lot.
The filling is only a stop on the road to the pie.
Did you not taste the filling? We're like, wow, that is fantastic.
I was really impressed, but it physically was not a pie.
In an alternate universe, it was a pie. Okay?
It's like in Spider-Man where like the universes get all jumbled up and stuff and they start to kind of look
like a pie. It's not like in Spider-Man. Like it is. In real life. In an alternate universe, it was a pie.
It is a real life.
So I protest.
It is a real life Spider-Verse. Okay. So that will affect the season scores in some form or fashion. But otherwise, like I said, get on the Discord. Vote for the awards. Make this pie. Look out for August novelties.
Yeah.
Do you recommend the Camino to other people?
No, yeah. I recommend this to everyone. Honestly, Dave, Chris, Gabby, Noel, everyone out there, go do the Camino. It's highly recommended.
That will not be happening.
I mean, you could do like some people where they literally go, okay, I've seen people getting off of buses, like literally
you can also just do the last
30 miles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like they're so happy to get the scroll.
Can I tell you how I'm going to do it if I do it?
Take a helicopter.
And I can tell you what Renee was fucking doing. She was getting some fucking drone dropping off fucking stuff because he was so far ahead of you, right? So what I'm going to do is I'm gonna like along the way before, like a week before, I'm going to plant some kind of like motorbikes throughout the 500-mile journey. And I'm just gonna be like, hey, guys.
You're going to Floyd Landis this whole thing.
Yeah, I know that you think that we should do it together. I just don't wait up for me.
Don't wait up for me, but somehow I'll beat you there.
They're not gonna. He's not gonna know that I've already been at the wherever they're staying per night, hours in advance.
Like Dave, why aren't you sweating?
And what I'll do is I'll go to the hotel, work out in the hotel.
See, I'm gonna do it, but I'm gonna cut that part out. I'm gonna be the first person to gain weight on the Santiago. The Camino de Santiago. Yeah, it's gonna be. All right, Malcolm, thank you so much for joining this episode of Recipe Club. Thank you to our listeners. And make this pie. It's pretty delicious.
Yeah, thank y'all.
At least make the filling.
Filling very, very good.
Make the filling.
Right? Right? Gabby? You can take the knife out of my back.